Welcome to Ring of Fire. I am Farron Cousins from Ring of Fire's YouTube channel, and I am sitting in this week for Sam Cedar. Coming up on today's show, we've got Joshua Holland from The Nation, who's going to be here to tell us how the pandemic may have hurt Donald Trump's chances of re-election, but by not quite as much as you might think. I also have business insider columnist Manny Fidel, who's going to be here to tell us why settling for Joe Biden isn't a bad idea, considering the alternative. And Alex Koch is going to be here to tell us about his new project, Opt Out News, which is giving progressive outlets a single roof to congregate under. And don't forget that you can get even more Ring of Fire 7 days a week on our YouTube channel. Just go to youtube.com/TheRingOfFire. And if you want to help support the program, you can become a member to our YouTube community, or you can support us on Patreon at patreon.com/TheRingOfFire. The reward tiers on both our YouTube community and our Patreon are identical, and you can get great content, including exclusive videos not released to the general public. So if you want to help support the show, those are the two best ways to do it. And of course, make sure you subscribe to the Ring of Fire podcast. You can go to rofpodcast.com or fans.fm/ringoffire. As usual, we're going to get things started this week with the biggest news stories of the week, and obviously there was nothing bigger than the Republican National Convention. Of course, that actually doesn't apply to the ratings, which fell several million below what the DNC pulled in last week. So that was a very interesting thing that happened, something that I'm very sure left the entire Trump family not feeling too good about themselves. But to be honest, obviously, everybody knew going into this that this was going to be a complete and total freak show. I mean, last week when they announced that they were going to have Nick Sandman and the St. Louis gun couple, the McCloskeys, appear at their convention, it was very clear at that point that this wasn't going to be a serious political convention that actually dealt with issues. This was going to be a complete and total culture war setting, really. And honestly, the culture war stuff was the tamest out of everything that happened this week. The whole thing, and I'm sorry for laughing, but this is hilarious, because the whole convention really kicked off with Kimberly Guilfoyle, Donald Trump Jr.'s girlfriend, when she gave her speech, where she just straight up screamed at an empty room for 6 minutes and I think 7 seconds, like yelling at the top of her lungs these crazy, crazy rants that didn't mean anything at all about how we're going to make America great again, how we're going to do all these wonderful things. And Don Jr. spoke that night too, sounding like a used car salesman or a late night infomercial host saying, "You too can enjoy the prosperity of a Trump administration if you act now and reelect my father." I mean, it was absolutely, didn't even sound like his real voice, what he was doing there. But that's what we got. And of course, on night number one, we also had Matt Gaetz, who came out and probably gave one of the most bizarre rants of the entire week-long convention. It was utterly insane what Matt Gaetz was saying. He said that if you elect Joe Biden, the America that we know and love will go away, as if that hadn't already happened. He said he's going to open the borders. He's going to let MS-13 come in and move next door to you. Cops are going to be shot. Children are going to be shot. As if these things aren't already happening right now, other than the MS-13 moving next door to you. Which, you know what I find really funny? Is you only hear about MS-13 when there's an election right next door, right? Republicans don't talk about MS-13 unless it's politically advantageous. Why? Because MS-13 is not actually a very big threat to your life, like at all. But they want you to think it is. They want these people you know, in Florida or Wisconsin and Pennsylvania, they want you to think that you've got these MS-13 gang members right around the corner. And the Democrats are going to move them even closer than right around the corner. You elect Republicans, they're going to keep them at bay a little bit. You know, they're always going to be on the horizon, always waiting for a Democrat to take over so MS-13 can then run in and straight up murder you. But, you know, as long as you keep electing Republicans, they'll keep them far enough away to where they can immediately come back if Democrats are elected. So that was Matt Gaetz's crazy speech. And he also talked about how, you know, Democrats are criminals. They're going to embrace the criminals, criminal, coming from the guy who, by the way, has been investigated for potential criminal activity an average of once per year since he's been in office, not to mention his, history prior to being elected, where his daddy had to step in and get him off for the DUI. And then they ended up having the police officer who arrested Matt Gaetz for DUI fired. Matt Gaetz can talk about law and order and criminals all he wants. But at the end of the day, he really is the kind of person that growing up, our parents would have warned us, stay away from him. So that's the irony of him. And believe it or not, folks, like that was night one. That was just the first night of insanity that we got from these folks. We had Melania Trump come out talking about this person who wants action, who wants to do things, who wants to, you know, make this country truly better, who wants to listen to people. And everything she said about him, she got skewered for it on Wednesday because nothing she said actually described her husband. People were mockingly saying, like, I want to know who this man is she's talking about because he sounds awesome. So that's how her speech went. You had Pam Bondi, the former Attorney General of Florida, who is now a registered foreign agent. She was out there trying to rehash or revive, really, the conspiracy theory that Joe Biden was somehow involved in all this Ukraine fraud and the firing of the prosecutor because his son was under investigation. And none of that's true whatsoever. That was actually looked into a bit during the impeachment hearing. Nothing came of it because nobody could find anything to actually pop Biden for. But what Bondi did there, and I think this is kind of where we need to go at this point in our discussion, is that Bondi actually highlighted where the Republicans are going to go in the, 66, 65, whatever days it is until the election. They're going to try to paint Joe Biden as some kind of corrupt criminal. Biden is many things. Biden is a centrist. You know, Biden is the guy who helped bring us the crime bill. You know, he is the guy who attacked Anita Hill. But he is not a criminal, right? There are plenty of very real things that the Trump people, the Republicans, that they could go after Biden for, things that would actually resonate pretty well. And I can say that because I'm fairly confident none of them are listening to this. I'm not trying to help them before people get mad about that. But there's very real things you could go after the man for. But they're not doing it. They would rather live in this fantasy world. And here's why. Because any attack that they levy against Joe Biden can be thrown right back at them for doing the same thing. That's why Trump is having such a hard time fighting Biden. You know, a month or so ago, the whole thing from the Trump campaign was that Joe Biden is mentally not there enough to be president of the United States. He's Crazy Joe, Sleepy Joe, Slow Joe is the new incarnation of it from Trump. But the truth is, every time he'd lob one of those attacks, everybody would just go right back to Trump. Even the people who don't like Biden would hit back at Trump and saying, "The whatever's wrong with Joe Biden is also wrong with you, too. We have 4 years worth of video evidence of this. We can see the mental decline happening in real time. But aside from the fact that you both clearly have signs of mental decline, which comes with age. I mean, that's not an insult. That's what's happening to these men. We can see it. We know. That doesn't mean they're unfit. It just means they're not quite as sharp as they used to be. But when you take the case of Trump, the professionals tell us there's also elements of mental illness there. And that's why his mental state is far more dangerous than Joe Biden's. Because Joe Biden might be a little bit slower, may take him a little bit longer because of his age. But Trump has that plus possible mental illness, according to the health professionals. So, you know, Dr. Bandy Lee is a great example of one of the people who keeps telling us about Trump's cognitive problems and his potential mental illnesses. They're not saying the same thing about Biden. Is there a little bit of decline? Sure. Is it something we need to be like all that concerned about? Probably not. So anyway, that's kind of where the convention went. Nothing but lies, you know, potential slander at points, but nothing real tangible, because the party had decided prior to the convention beginning that they weren't actually even going to have a party platform this year. Instead, what they were going to do is just go along with whatever Donald Trump wanted. Donald Trump officially became the Republican Party. The Republican Party officially became a Trump-owned property at the start of this week. It's all about him. They allowed him to speak every day. He was the focus, not a policy, not a plan, not a vision, just unyielding loyalty to Donald Trump. That is what the Republican Party announced it would do this week. And again, they, as CNN fact checker Daniel Dale described it, the Republican convention became nothing more than a parade of dishonesty. And the reason for that, the reason it was nonstop lies and distortions and, you know, misrepresentations, is because this is a party, folks, that has nothing to run on. They do not have a platform. They do not have a platform because they do not have ideas. The last time the Republican Party had an idea, and it was a bad one, by the way, was when Ronald Reagan came along in the 80s and said, let's do trickle-down economics. My economic advisor, David Stockman, he's got this plan that if we cut taxes on the wealthy, they'll give more of it to the poor. Stockman came out, probably 10 years ago at this point, and admitted that trickle-down economics cannot work in practice. That the theory was based on faulty information. It can't ever happen. Trickle down cannot and does not and will not ever work, according to the guy that created it. But that was the last new idea that the Republican Party had, was to cut taxes for the wealthy. And so ever since then, the 40 years that have passed, that has been their response to everything. Oh, we got a pandemic. Let's cut taxes, which they did. Oh, no, we've got an issue with healthcare. Well, what if we cut the CEO's taxes? Then they'll lower the cost of healthcare for Americans. And they tried that. Didn't work. So when it came time for the convention, what are they going to run on? You know, what policies are they going to talk about? Tax cuts? No, because they've angered America with the nonstop tax cuts. Americans aren't happy with this because they understand. They see through the fraud now. So without that one single idea that the party has had over the past 40 years, my entire lifetime, actually longer than my entire lifetime, without that one idea, they have nothing to talk about. So they resort to making things up about Joe Biden, making things up about the Democratic Party, trying to make themselves look better by lying about their opponent because they don't have a single positive thing to say about what they actually want to do if they get another 4 more years in power. The progressive wing of the Democratic Party isn't exactly excited to vote for Joe Biden. In fact, polls show most Democrats in general are not excited to vote for Joe Biden. We had a very real opportunity for honest progressive change in the country based on all of the candidates we had in the primary. And we got left with the same old career politician. But, according to my next guest, settling for Joe Biden is actually a pretty rosy choice considering what the alternative is. Joining me to talk about this is Manny Fidel, columnist and opinion editor for Business Insider. Joe Biden as the anti-climax of the Democratic Party. Manny Fidel, columnist with Business Insider. Such a wonderful piece you've written here, and so very true too, because when you look back at everything, all of the possibilities that we had just a year ago, and then what we ended up with,
right.
could not be more disappointing. So lay this out for us. Tell us about this piece you've written.
So I ventured out to write a piece basically explaining how to cope with voting for Biden if you are a progressive. And yeah, it starts off by describing Biden as an anti-climax because not super long ago, it looked like Bernie was, in the front of the pack. And so it's not just, he's not just an anti-climax because of his policy positions, but because literally it didn't look like he was going to win. I go through some points about how this could be an opportunity to push Biden and Harris to the left a little bit. It could be an opportunity, or it could be a foundational setup for the next election where Biden and Harris are potential incumbents. And we have a new starting point, if you will, for progressive politics. For example, Harris has been not so much recently, but kind of a proponent of Medicare for all. And it seems that the next election we have, primary challengers will have to include that in their policy positions if they want to be put on the same page as the incumbents. The whole article is kind of like a how-to on trying to find some enthusiasm to vote for the Biden-Harris ticket.
Well, and you make a really good point. And this was a point I've seen climate scientist Michael Mann make on Twitter a month or so ago, really. And that was, everybody who says there's no difference between these two people, look at the climate plans, look at the environmental issues. And you bring that up too, because that is, definitely an area where if you kind of think Biden has nothing for you, well, we've got this major environmental issue too. And this is a great week that kind of highlights the environmental stuff. 12,000 lightning strikes in California have caused countless fires in areas that haven't burned in over 70 years. 2 hurricanes in the Gulf of Mexico, something we have not necessarily even seen in our lifetimes, especially hitting the same area. So climate change is something that we need to pay attention to. It's not being taken seriously now. In fact, we're moving backwards on it. We wouldn't be moving backwards under Biden. I mean, that's pretty clear that wouldn't happen under that administration.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's interesting because during the primary, Biden was actually given an F rating on his climate change stance during the primaries. But since then, he's kind of gathered support from, I think his name is Varshini Prakash. I hope I pronounced that correctly. He co-founded the Sunrise Movement and is now on Biden's climate task force. And I believe Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is also on that task force. And it does show that there is a very clear difference between these two candidates in terms of climate change. And it also, in my opinion, shows that Biden can be pushed to the left with certain policies, and climate change is just one of them.
So is that kind of one of the things that we should be using as an example? Because there are plenty of people on social media, even in regular media too, that think we wouldn't get any kind of progressiveness. We wouldn't be able to push Biden and Harris. Their records kind of speak for themselves. The fact that the DNC platform wouldn't allow us to even say we support these progressive ideals. So those folks say, is it even worth it to try? Mm-hmm. And I think for me, the answer is yes. But how do we convince them that the answer is yes? Because that is, that's a Herculean task. These are people that had gone all in, obviously most of them for Bernie, some of them for Elizabeth Warren. And they said, we mm-hmm. wanted real change. This isn't it.
Right. So it's a great point. I don't blame a single person from being kind of disengaged from this election now that Biden is the choice. But to your point, there are ways. I mean, I personally feel like it is a waste of the progressive effort to do things like push Biden on the left to the left for climate change and then not vote for him.
No.
It feels weird to see Kamala Harris co-sponsor Bernie Sanders' Medicare for All bill and then kind of just not vote in the general election. I do understand the kind of conflict there for progressives, but I do view it as kind of, you know, we put all this effort into raising awareness for Medicare for All for climate change, and it would be kind of a waste to not vote for the ticket most likely to support those issues.
Yeah, and you know, I've made a pledge. I'm not going to engage in any kind of vote shaming, regardless of what people are doing one way or another. But I see a lot of these people who say, well, the Democrats haven't done anything to earn my vote, so I'm going to vote for the Green Party. Well, okay, but you're just defaulting to them. They haven't earned your vote necessarily either.
Yeah.
And I like the Green Party. I really, really do. But they have such a bad history of putting up, you know, bad presidential candidates. I mean, Jill Stein was great on some issues, but just absolutely so out there in la la land on other issues.
Yeah.
That she couldn't really be taken seriously. And I feel like Howie Hawkins is almost the same way. I mean, if you look back at his history, this man has lost so many elections by such massive margins too. This isn't a serious candidate. So until we can get these parties to even take themselves seriously, we're kind of left with the two-party dichotomy. Libertarians, I don't even want them in the conversation.
Yeah.
But the Green Party could be great. They're just kind of choosing to not be.
Right, exactly. And when you, you know, like you said, I'm with you. I don't want to do any vote shaming. But when you look, if you're going to vote, the basic question is which one of these parties or candidates lines up most accurately with my values and my what I want to see happen to the country. Right now, to your point, the Green Party, as you said, are putting up these kind of wonky characters. So to me, it's just a very clear choice. It is an unfortunate choice. It is not a choice that we make enthusiastically, but it's pretty clear where we should be going if we do choose to vote.
Well, and look at the Joe Biden that Donald Trump is actually running against. That is a Joe Biden that in their minds, in the Republican minds, he's going to defund the police. He's going to force health care on all of us. He's going to have this wonderful immigration policy that actually allows people to come here. We're going to have socialized medicine, socialized college. Yeah. Like that
sounds
Joe
great.
Biden is awesome. Yeah. And so to me, it's just hilarious that, you know, the Bernie supporters, we had always heard, well, you can't run him because of that socialist label. We knew from the beginning, no matter who they put up,
yeah,
they were going to call them the most extreme liberal in history. And sure enough, that is literally the label they have slapped on Biden and Harris. And it couldn't be further from the truth. I mean, Harris's refusal to prosecute Mnuchin is why he is serving in Trump's administration. I mean, Trump gave money to Harris. So this is weird. Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, I will say this is not like anything we've really seen before, with just the level of insanity from the right and, you know, the left having this, you know, not even a real identity. I think they're still looking for it. You know, they don't know which way they know which way they need to go. I think they're too afraid to actually take that step. Maybe it's the donors. Maybe it's just them personally, but they know where they should go. They're just not willing to do it yet.
Yeah, I think it's kind of two-pronged, where the first prong is that we are operating under a party system where, you know, it's hard to see Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren in the same party as Joe Biden in different countries. So there's that duality. But then there's also the case that, you know, during the entire DNC, we got maybe like 2 minutes worth of progressive values being promoted. So there's just, we have a huge fight ahead of us, and it's multifaceted and it's multi-pronged and it's extremely challenging. And it's disappointing for that reason. But at the end of the day, there's one path we can take of the options left to us.
Absolutely. Manny Fidel, Business Insider, thank you very much for joining us today. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Manny Fidel is a columnist and opinion editor for Business Insider. The conventional wisdom right now is that the pandemic has absolutely cratered Donald Trump's chances of winning re-election. After all, in poll after poll after poll, Joe Biden is absolutely destroying Donald Trump's. Some of the polls actually have him winning by double digits. But according to my next guest, those poll numbers really aren't that different from what they are prior to the pandemic. I'm joined now by Joshua Holland from The Nation to talk about why the pandemic may have hurt Trump, but not by as much as you would think. So, Josh, you've got a great new article that you put out earlier this week talking about the fact that even if it were not for the pandemic, the numbers that we're seeing right now with regards to Biden versus Trump, they would be relatively the same, because when you actually look at the bigger picture, not just the pandemic months, things haven't changed that much in terms of Trump's approval, his numbers, everything. So tell us what's really happening here with the big picture.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, when you look at the polling averages, for example, you see that there has been, and I mean, this is, it's almost hard to wrap one's head around this, but despite 180,000 mostly avoidable deaths, an unemployment rate that is the greatest since the Great Depression, the race has only shifted by about 2 percentage points since January. And Donald Trump's approval numbers, his net approval, so basically favorability minus unfavorable, has also shifted by about 2 points. So today, Joe Biden is leading in 538's average by 9 points. And, you know, we started the year, I think he was leading by, his lead has increased by about a point since I put that piece up. So I think he was at 6 points, actually. So it's a three-point shift. And, I mean, that's a reflection of partisanship, obviously. But I think it's also, more importantly, a reflection of the different realities we now have. You know, it used to be that we would have, you know, everybody had their own opinion, but not their own facts. Now it depends on what your media consumption is, what your media diet is. If you watch Fox News and that's your primary source of information, there isn't a lot of reason to blame Donald Trump for the problems that this country faces. And, you know, and that's true if you read Breitbart or The Federalist, et cetera, et cetera. So it's mind-boggling for us. You know, if you have a balanced media diet, for example, and there was a study that came out, I believe in 2018, that found that people on the left and the center left and in the center and on the center right tend to be more likely to check out different types of media. They'll read something in National Review and the New York Times, and they ended up with kind of a balanced perspective, more or less. The only exception to that was people on the right who tended to shun mainstream outlets, obviously progressive outlets, for reasons that should be obvious to us all. So, you know, it boggles the mind, but it is also understandable. And so I pose this question in the piece. I say, does that mean that we should assume that had the pandemic not hit the United States in 2020, had we had the election that it looked like we were going to have last year, with Trump running on a strong economy, not a crazy death toll from some horrific, you know, disease outbreak, would he be doing a few points better? And I posit that that is not the case, that in fact he would be doing just as poorly for one reason. And that reason is that the Trump regime is currently pursuing a case at the Supreme Court to have them strike down the Affordable Care Act in its entirety, you know, from the root up, just to strike down the entire law. And this has not gotten a lot of attention because Democrats are, you know, understandably running primarily on Trump's incompetent handling of the pandemic and the, you know, the resulting economic pain. So they have a very clear message, and it makes sense to run on that because that's what we're all focused on. If that had not happened, I am reasonably sure that the Democrats would be focused laser-like on this latest effort to repeal, or to not even to repeal through the Democratic process, to get the Supreme Court to strike down the Affordable Care Act. And well, go ahead.
I was just going to say, you know, that's a good point too, especially because the Democrats do have plenty of things to run on. And we have seen, you know, up until, you know, 2 days ago when the Republicans decided, okay, we're not even going to have an official platform. It's just going to be whatever Trump says. But for a few months now, we have seen Republican senators who are up for re-election. We have seen Republican donors essentially begging the party, could you please come up with some kind of platform, some kind of policy for everybody to rally around? And they haven't. And that's always going to be a problem when you're running a national campaign. You have to have something real and tangible. So even without the pandemic, they still had nothing that they were really running on. They tried to paint Biden as, you know, the next incarnation of Fidel Castro. That didn't exactly pan out for him. Yeah. They tried to attack his, you know, mental prowess. Well, that backfired. So none of the attacks have landed. They're not running on any specific policies. So they have nothing right now, and the Democrats are able to move around. Like you said, if it weren't for the pandemic, they'd be talking about healthcare in this, you know, very massive Supreme Court case that nobody seems to be paying attention to. Right. They'd be running on, you know, wage growth, you know, the income gap, things like that. So they have room to move. The Republicans really don't, because Trump refuses to let them move around.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, the Republican agenda, someone on Twitter, I forget who, and I wish I could give them credit, said that the RNC's agenda is just a I'm with stupid t-shirt.
Yeah.
Which is a perfect summary. The point that I made in the piece is that, you know, Democrats ran on healthcare by and large. There was a ton of issues in the 2018 midterms, but there was a focus on protecting and expanding the ACA and beating back Republican attempts to strip healthcare from people in order to finance high-end tax cuts. And what that resulted in was the Democrats' biggest midterm margin as an out party ever in history, right? So it seems to me that it is not a leap to suggest that, and by the way, the 2018 midterms, that campaign happened before this case and after the Republicans had failed to repeal Obamacare. So there wasn't even an active, you know, court case or something to point to in 2018. This time, I think it's a safe assumption that having experienced that in 2018, having reaped the reward for that kind of focus, they would be talking about all of the individual consequences of the regime successfully killing the ACA in its entirety. So, you know, there would no longer be a ban on discrimination against people with pre-existing conditions. All of these subsidies would be wiped out. I think it was 23 million people would lose their coverage entirely, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. They would be hitting him every day on this. But I'll say one other thing. And sorry for just going on.
Oh, not a problem.
Okay, but one of the things that I think is important to understand about this year's race that is different from past cycles is that, you know, and I don't think that all of the pundits have really figured this out, given the scope of the crises we have, given the degree of polarization that we have right now, it seems to me that voters are locked into a greater degree than ever before. There was a Yahoo News poll that came out Monday. It found that 3% of Biden voters and 2% of, I think it was 2% of Trump voters, could possibly change their minds between now and the election. Regardless of what happens, that is the tiniest sliver. And it's been that way for months. Again, there has only been this 2 or 3 point shift in the race with everything going on. If you look back to 2019, Biden consistently had all the Democrats had advantages over Trump in head-to-head polling during the primaries, but Biden's has consistently been around 6 points for over a year now. So, you know, all of the usual politics that we talk about, I think that this race is going to come down to, you know, a majority of Americans who want to see Trump out versus voter suppression of various stripes. I think that that's what it really comes down to, which doesn't lend itself to, you know, the usual political analysis, because most of our political analysis is like, oh, how are we going to reach out to this group? And how are we going to, you know, this candidate is alienating that group. At this point, it's like, you know, the vast majority of people are absolutely set in their preference and very high likelihood that they're going to vote.
Well, and it's really interesting too, just because of the fact that, and this is another thing I think that gets forgotten quite a bit, is he was impeached. Yeah. He was impeached earlier this year, but obviously so much has happened in between them. So that's another area. And you know, when we look at the ads that the Democrats have put out, they're not even having to touch that. You know, that to me is very remarkable that this big major thing happened, you know, exceedingly rare impeachment, but everything is so far down the toilet that we don't even have to talk about that anymore.
That's right. That's
not even an issue when it really should be a pretty big issue, but that's how bad things have gotten here. And so all of this does play against Trump, but you really nailed it with the fact that we don't know what this voter suppression is actually going to do. These attacks on the post office. He hinted earlier this week, I think it was, that he was considering asking sheriffs and armed off-duty police officers to monitor polls.
Yeah.
The Republican Party is going to hire or recruit, I think, 50,000 poll watchers is what their goal is. So that's going to be massive on top of, you know, voter purges. I'm down here in Florida. Felons got the right to vote back. Republicans have been working for 2 years to take it back away from them.
Yeah, with the poll tax.
Yeah, and so that is going to play such a big role and easily could be the determining factor in a lot of these swing states. You know, the polls say one thing, but if these people aren't allowed to actually go and vote, those polls suddenly become, you know, meaningless.
Yes. I mean, so there's a lot of analysts who say, I worry about this or that in terms of persuasion. There was somebody from Mother Jones was concerned on Twitter earlier today about how, you know, Trump's demagoguery about, you know, urban mobs coming out into the suburbs and, you know, killing Whitey may move some people. But I think that when I worry about these mechanistic things. I worry about, you know, registration purges. I worry about absentees not being counted because they have some flaw. I worry about absentees not being counted because they're not postmarked correctly or come in late. You know, that is going to happen. 550,000 absentee ballots were excluded during the primaries. And, you know, these are the things that I worry about. And they're not things that, you know, lend themselves to prediction right? So we obsess over prediction models and, you know, the polls and all of this, and the fundamentals, and people say, oh, well, look, the economy is this, and in all these past cycles, when things look like this, this happened. And none of that accounts for the just brutal realities of this race, which is all about Republican attempts to suppress the vote.
Well, and when we had the initial push for this, you know, universal vote by mail, long before the attacks on the post office by DeJoy, that was, you know, not necessarily the beginning of the pandemic, but when things were starting to get bad and the mask wearing wasn't as, I don't want to say popular, but wasn't as widespread as it is now. So that's why the vote by mail thing became such a big issue. If everybody could mask up, the workers, the people going in there, things would be a lot safer. So, you know, for anybody listening, if you're not comfortable with the vote by mail, if you think, you know, it's too questionable at this point because of what's happened, you know, mask up, glove up if you need to, get the hand sanitizer, wash your hands, don't touch your face, but, you know, don't let them make you too afraid to vote. You know, do take care of yourself, take every necessary precaution, don't put yourself in danger if you don't need to, but, you know, this, there are ways to make this safe, even if voting in person. And I think that's changed quite a bit in the last 2 months. You know, we're not seeing as many, you know, angry, violent people saying I'm going to die if I have to wear a mask because you can't breathe through them, allegedly. So maybe this isn't going to be as bad as we think it is, but we always have to hope for the best and kind of prepare for the worst.
Yeah. I mean, you should, I would urge, everybody listening to this to make a plan for how they're going to vote. And really just think it through, act on it early. And I would point out that, you know, the processes are different from state to state, but in most places you can also drop off an absentee ballot in person rather than trusting the mail. So it's not even that we have a choice between, you know, masking up and going and waiting online and voting at the polls and voting by mail. The third option in most places, and, you know, by all means, check out your local voting information. In most places, you can drop off a absentee ballot at the Board of Elections, or they may have drop boxes, depending on where you live, et cetera, et cetera. I am going to mask up personally. My plan is to mask up and go vote early in person. I'm going to go on the third day of in-person voting. I'm going to do it during the daytime, during working hours, and I'm hoping that I can get in and out real quickly, like a trip into the supermarket.
Yeah. I am disappointed. I always take my kids with me every time I voted in the past. Obviously, not going to do that this year, but I will be there. I had my vote by mail application. I had filled it out, but then all the post office stuff. So I have destroyed that, thrown it out. I will be voting in person with a mask. So that's kind of the best we can hope for. But Joshua Holland, contributor with The Nation, with Alternet, thank you for talking with us today. This is a great piece. It gives us some good perspective on everything. So thank you very much for joining us here on Ring of Fire.
Thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Joshua Holland is the host of Politics and Reality Radio. He is also a regular contributor to both The Nation and Alternet. Corporations control nearly all of the media that you consume on a regular basis. Except, of course, the independent creators out there, the ones on YouTube, the ones with the progressive magazines like The Nation and Mother Jones and Jacobin and all of the other ones that most of us read regularly. The problem has always been each one of these outlets has to go it alone. But a new news aggregate site has come along trying to bring all of these together, the YouTube creators, the independent Substack writers, and even some of the bigger progressive magazines under one roof. That project is called Opt Out News, and I am joined now by Alex Koch, the co-founder of Opt Out, to tell us what it's all about. So Alex Koch is with me right now. Alex is the co-founder of Opt Out News. This is, well, I'll let you go ahead and explain to everybody what Opt Out is about.
Well, thanks a lot for having me on. And also thanks for being a partner of Opt Out News. I'll tell you all about it. And where Ring of Fire fits in. So yes, we are a forthcoming news aggregator app. We are going to be a 501c3 nonprofit organization. And we are going to feature 100% independent media. So that's news and opinion, videos, podcasts, articles, et cetera, from news outlets and individuals who are not, news outlets that aren't owned by any corporations, that aren't, running tons of corporate ads, that are actually independent. And I believe that independent media actually brings people the most honest and truthful news and opinion, because they're not influenced by large corporations.
You know, we've over the years, Ring of Fire has actually been involved in many different outlets and many different incarnations, I guess, of progressive media. Air America Radio being the most obvious. That's where Ring of Fire actually came from. But we were independently produced, as were a lot of the shows there. And Air America couldn't make it because it just couldn't make money. Very common problem. Then, Current TV ran into the same problem. You had great progressive programming and then not any money behind it. And so a lot of people have been saying over the years, because I guess, they're younger generation, they don't necessarily remember those outlets. They say, well, why is there no outlet? And the answer is, well, because there's not any money for there to be this big kind of overarching program or programming outlet. But I think what Opt Out is doing right now is actually phenomenal, because this isn't trying to get everybody under one roof and everybody, you work for us now and we have to come up with the money to pay you. This is taking wonderful groups that are already out there and saying, hey, why don't we band together as individuals, but collective, to make this happen? And that is a, hindsight is what we should have done with a lot of these other outlets, but it's great to see that happening now.
Yeah, well, I'm glad that you guys, really support the concept. That's exactly right. I mean, I think that independent media, I think by nature of a really vicious industry and a really tough industry to survive in, independent media is quite fragmented. A lot of these outlets that might share a lot of perspectives, ideas, ideals as well, are just not working together, because it's just not a system that's really built for that. So what we want to do is bring all these outlets together. And also we're going to have freelance reporter partners as well. So people who don't work for any particular outlet, that's also a big core constituency of who, we're hoping to promote, because, I think there's power in numbers, and we really think that, a rising tide lifts all boats. And so if all the great independent media producers can get together and we can promote their content 24/7, we're going to have curated, feeds by myself and our editors. We're also going to have personalized feeds that are going to give you more of the content from the outlets that you follow and the reporters that you like and the podcasts that you like. I think we can have this kind of platform level innovation instead of what a lot of people are already out there doing, which is starting their own news outlets independent of corporate influence and doing great work. We just want to promote that work in a central hub. And because that doesn't exist yet, we think we may have a pretty solid idea.
No, I agree with you 100%. I think this is a phenomenal idea. And again, trust me, this is coming from somebody that's been involved in so many different projects that unfortunately, couldn't succeed. And every time it always boils down to the money issue. So when you change that, when it is not necessarily, hey, you're working for free, but you're doing this already, let us just push it out for you, because they still get the views, right? The people who are submitting the content, whether it's, from Jacobin or from Ring of Fire, we get that, but we also get to reach an audience that we otherwise would not. And of course, we do what we can to help promote this outlet too. It's what the left has been missing for so long. Because we see this on the right, we see these well-organized, everybody's kind of on the same page, everybody, it works together, but we haven't had that on the left. It's been the Wild West out here. And so this is, you know, a really good attempt to kind of bring it all together and say, listen, if we band together, if we fight together, if we do this together, we can, you know, greatly increase our chances of a positive outcome here. And hopefully that is what happens.
Yeah. And so one of our main goals of this, you know, Walker Bragman is my co-founder. We're both journalists, working journalists. So, you know, we really understand the perspective of the writer, you know, of the reporter, of the podcaster. We also have a podcast that's going to be, that is the first original production of Opt Out News, which is going to be our original outlet. So we're also going to be having original content for people who use the app and people who subscribe to the app. But yeah, you know, we don't know if our funding, you know, platform is going to work for ourselves. I mean, we need money to power our own app. We need to pay hosting fees. We need to hopefully hire staff that we can pay and have a fully functioning nonprofit, you know, with a unionized workforce. We're far away from that. But so in other words, you know, we hope that we can give users basically a broad swath of all the great content out there, and we can push users to fund those outlets individually, and then also to help us by perhaps paying $5 a month, you know, for a premium version of the app. It's going to be free, but there'll be a premium version with personalization features that you can't get for free. And we hope that it'll be enough of a service for people that they'll give us a little of their money too, so we can promote the other outlets that we're also trying to help fundraise.
And, you know, one thing I found very interesting over the last few years through, you know, GoFundMe, through Patreon, through YouTube community membership, people actually are willing, like if they like something, if they support something, they are more than willing to, you know, do a couple dollars a month for this kind of stuff, especially when you consider the fact that so many people are kind of getting away from traditional sources of media in general and going more towards the, you know, monthly subscription thing, $2 or $3 here. And this is a great outlet to kind of host that kind of platform, I guess you would call it, or you know, subscription model. So hopefully this thing does, you know, become definitely self-sustaining. And I think it absolutely has that potential. I mean, this is such a great idea with, you know, some incredible talent. And trust me, I'm not even talking about Ring of Fire on that, but some of the other groups, you know, that you have recruited here, I look at that and I'm just in awe, you know, to be among them. So you guys have done a great, great job of reaching out to progressives. And at the same time, it's wonderful to see everybody being so willing to be like, hell yeah, let me come and be a part of this.
Yeah. We have almost 70 partners and we've got other video channels. We just, one of our newest partners, along with you is the Rational National. It's David Dole. You know, he's all day. He works so hard and he puts out 3 or 4 videos a day. He's got his own rig. You know, he does his own graphics, everything. We got the Nomi Key Kant show, which is fairly new. And, you know, we're helping her spread the word about her show. And then, you know, we've got print outlets like Jacobin, Sludge, the Money and Politics website where I actually used to work. Had a great time there, and I'm glad that we can keep working together. Popula, which is Maria Bastillos' news and culture site. And actually, on the topic of these kinds of networks, they actually just launched what's called the Brick House today. And that's a network where there's 8 or 9 publications. I think it's $1 per publication per month or something. But it's kind of a package deal. So it might be $8 or $9 a month, I believe, or maybe 85 for the year. And it's Sludge, Popula. There's Tom Skoka's outlet. There's a lot of others, some cartoonists and stuff. So we're going to try and help support them as well. And I just think like all these kind of innovations are happening. And just, you know, while I'm on the topic, another one of our partners is what's called the Discontent. And that's a network of Substack newsletter writers who have come together. It's also probably 8 to 10. Some of these folks are from the former website called Splinter, which was part of the GO Media Group. So that was, you know, basically a private equity firm comes in, they buy, Gizmodo Media, and then they, you know, break it up. They completely axe Splinter, which was a great politics news website. And then they basically ran Deadspin into the ground. So a lot of the ex-Splinter folks are working at a Substack called Discourse Blog. Discourse is part of the Discontents. So, you know, we're trying to support all these initiatives while doing our own at the same time.
Yeah, that's very tough to do. So that's no easy task. And I admire y'all for doing this. So I guess the big thing here is, you know, what can people do right now? Is it open for subscriptions? Not prescriptions, sorry. Mm-hmm. Subscriptions. And if so, how do people go about that?
Yeah, so, well, the app is in development. We're shooting for a launch early next year. It is an all-volunteer operation, so the development and everything is, and the user experience. I mean, this takes time because people are volunteering their skills, and we're so grateful for the Progressive Coders Network, which is the C4 nonprofit that we're working with to develop the app. But in the meantime, we have a Substack newsletter ourselves. It's just optout.substack.com. And you can sign up there. You can be a free member of the email list, or you can give us $5 a month or $55 for a year. And that's just going to help us with the initial costs of what we're doing right now. Incorporating as a nonprofit costs money. The hosting fees cost money. We're going to have other costs, of course, as a startup would. So we just actually hit 100 paid subscribers today. So thank you all to those 100. That's really encouraging. I mean, we don't have an app yet, but we're still raising money that way. And what we're doing is we just started our second weekly news roundup. So we've been doing one on Saturdays, and we just started one for Mondays, and we're probably going to do a Wednesday one too. So again, these are all free for anyone who wants to just join our email list. But if you want to help us, kind of pay for it, give us a donation, that's going to help us really with the nuts and bolts of making this app possible. So definitely go to optout.substack.com. We also have a launch page, which will tell you about our almost 70 partners and our advisors and the founders, Walker and me. That's optoutnews.org. And then, of course, we're on Twitter. It's at optoutapp. So you can connect with us in all three of those ways, and we really appreciate your support.
Again, everybody listening, everybody watching, you know, this is Progressive Media. This is what it's supposed to be about. This is everybody coming together. And Alex Koch, thank you so much, you and Walker, for putting this together and creating such a great platform for everybody's work to be showcased. So thank you very much for talking to us. And everybody, follow them on Twitter. Go subscribe to the mailing list. Do what you can to help. This is how Progressive Media survives. Alex, thank you very much.
Oh, well, yeah. And thank you so much. I mean, obviously we need your content. We need your links to make this happen. And people, the outlets that are putting their faith in us now are the most important ones because without you, we wouldn't have a project at all. And I know it's kind of tricky sometimes that they don't really know us. They don't really want to put their faith in us. I get that. But to have, you know, a video channel like yours that's putting out videos every day is going to be essential. So we really appreciate the buy-in now and the faith that we're going to really make this thing happen. And I think we will.
Absolutely. Thank you again. This is great, and nothing but the best for you. Thank you.
All right. Same to you.
Alex Koch is an investigative journalist and the co-founder of Opt Out News. You can find them at optout.substack.com. And that's it for today's episode of Ring of Fire. But don't forget, you can get even more Ring of Fire 7 days a week by subscribing to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/TheRingOfFire. You can also help support the program by subscribing to the podcast. Go to rofpodcast.com or fans.fm/RingOfFire. And you can also support us by becoming a member of our YouTube community. Just click on the membership page on our YouTube channel. You'll see all the great benefits there. Your support is greatly appreciated. And speaking of appreciated, I appreciate Sam Cedar for letting me sit in for him this week. Have a wonderful weekend. Talk to you next time.